recently, our company softball team lost the big game by one run. Then Dale tried to console us with the quote, "Winning isn't everything." Dale's a loser. I play to win, like early payout from Bet365. If my team goes up big, I get paid out instantly, even if they blow the lead later.
Sound familiar, Dale?
Bet365. Winning is everything. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-MY-RESET. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In-app only.
D-Mace, Vingan, and Donick, 102.5, 106.3, The Game. Broadcasting from the Busy Bee Plumbing, Heating, and Air Conditioning Game Nashville Studios, home of the $99 yearly Beehive membership, where the buzz is always about great service. Derek Mason and Adam Vingan here with you. Willie Donick will join us in the second hour of the program. He is with the Predators in Toronto as they prepare to take on the Maple Leafs tonight in a big game. Puck drop at 6:30, pregame at 5:30, right here on 102.5, 106.3, The Game. Willie texted us to let us know when he would be on the show. He went completely MIA on us yesterday.
Willie was like, man.
I think he was pissed at me.
No, Willie never. It takes more than that to get Willie upset. I've worked with Willie for a while. It takes more than that.
Willie does have
upset.
Willie does have, in my opinion, the patience of a saint. He is willing to let a lot of things slide. So when he gets riled up, you know something has touched a nerve. But Willie will be on the program at noon. We'll talk to Chris Mason, his broadcast partner, at 11:30 to preview the Predators game. Jonathan Hutton at noon. Mitch Light at 1 o'clock. So a full show here on Wednesday. And speaking of touching a nerve, Derek, I heard something this morning.
Yes.
Let's address this.
Let's do it.
Every Wednesday on the Robbie and Rex Road program, they have a segment called The Choice is Yours. Robbie was in the question-asking chair this week, and he presented this question. Who at our station can do the following things? Change a tire, replace a car battery, and change a broken headlight. And as soon as the question left Robbie's lips, he said, "There's no way Vinkin can do it."
Why not?
Immediately, he said, like, there wasn't even a breath. It was, he finished the question, "Vinkin can't do it." He actually put me ahead of Jared, who, if I'm not mistaken, a few years ago, didn't even own a ladder.
Jared has the softest hands in America.
Crazy. He didn't own a ladder?
Well, if I recall correctly, his smoke detector was going off during a show that he was doing
that's
from home.
Right, yes.
And he couldn't turn it off because he didn't have a ladder. Oh, so at least I own a ladder.
What house doesn't have a ladder?
Apparently
in it?
The Stillman house a few years ago.
His house, not his parents' house.
But let me just say, Robbie. So you say there's no way I could change a tire or replace a battery or change a headlight, and I just have this one thing to say to you. You're absolutely right. I can't do any of those things.
Adam, come on.
Like,
seriously?
Hold on, Adam.
You can't change a tire.
No.
You can't change a tire?
You
or
can't.
Battery?
Battery is so easy.
It's so easy.
Just undo them. Hold on. Put it back in.
Hold on. I can't jump start a car. I think that's important.
That's important, but changing a battery is also important.
Changing a battery is so easy.
Yeah, it's easy.
You know what? This is all I'm going to say.
You can Google it.
I'm gonna open up my wallet. I'm going to open up my wallet here, and I'm going to pull out my AAA card that says I'm a 41-year member despite the fact that I'm 35 because my parents have been.
Which means your parents
were.
You know what?
So
That's fair.
AAA helps me out. And I've also been fortunate enough, knock on wood, and I know this now as soon as I leave the station today, this is what's going to happen. I've never had an issue, fortunately, where I've blown a tire on the side of the road and I needed to change a tire. You know, I've never run out of gas because my mother always taught me when I first started to drive that I should always fill up when I have a quarter of a tank.
Yeah.
So I'm always one of those people. Mm-hmm. So to Robbie, you're absolutely right. I can't do any of those things.
Wow.
But how dare you?
As for you, Derek, they said, well, you know, you're a man of means. You could pay somebody.
I could do all three. No. I can do all three of them.
So you should actually take more umbrage than me.
Yeah, I can change a tire. I can change a battery. And I can change a headlight.
Okay.
Those are things like, I'm not saying that those are like basic things that every kid should learn, boy or girl. But I think as you move further and further in regards to generations, they make those things sort of not a little bit less convenient or a little bit less convenient in a sense, because they don't want you to have to worry about changing a tire or a battery. Why? Because they got run flat tires. Mm-hmm. So now you don't have to change your tire automatically right there. It usually gets you to where you want to go, at the home or the dealership, and then they change it for you. Or a battery is usually you jump started, or you know a tow truck come and get it and you take it to a place. And then the headlights, not too many people, unless it's an older car, not too many people want to sit there in their garage or something and change a headlight. So they try to make everything a little bit more easier and less convenient for you, or more convenient. Let's say that, more convenient for you. So these new cars, they barely have spare tires. I don't think I have a spare tire in my car. My truck has a spare tire, but it's a little bitty small donut tire. But my car, my truck has a full-size tire. It does, yep, because I looked at it like a couple months ago. My car doesn't have one. It's run flat tires. They don't put a tire underneath the thing, because nowadays they make these cars so compact, they don't make them with tires. They just give you a run flat tire, and they figure if you have a flat, it'll get you to where you're going. So I understand some of the kids now not being able to change a tire or something like that, because they don't even give you the option to change a tire. It's usually up to the parent to say, hey, come here, you know, little Johnny or little Derek or little Bailey, come here, let me show you how to change a tire. Because some cars don't even give you a jack.
That's true.
A jack's strong enough to lift your car anyway.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, but you're not in that generation, Adam.
You're not.
So,
David, can you do any of those things?
I'm not going to give you a
pass.
I
can't do the light bulb, but I can do everything else.
Keezer was here earlier, and he was trying to explain to me, oh, it's so easy. I'm like, okay.
It is easy, but it's just taking the time.
I can't really hate on people who don't know what to do. I mean, again, Joe Rexler doesn't know how to do any of that stuff either. But, you know, it's fine. It's
not but I would say this. Anyone that is above the age 30, 35 should know how to change a tire.
Agree.
All right, well, I'm 35.
You should know how to change a tire.
I'm 28. Tell us,
So David misses the cutoff.
He missed the cutoff.
So,
by 2 years.
Hair Metal Henry on the text line driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com says, hopefully Mrs. Vingan will sign the kid up for shop class in high school.
And that's what we're missing, too, shop class.
Let me tell you something. My wife is the handy woman in the house. Uh-huh. She does the home improvement projects. She is up on those things. I'm more of the
administrator. You're just a pretty face.
I'm definitely not that either. I'm the more of the administrative type. Uh-huh.
That looks good. That looks great.
Right. I'm the more of the administrative type, you know, with the spreadsheets and making sure everything is signed and sealed and delivered.
So it's like it's like the yin and the yang.
Right.
You know, I get it.
Right.
Yes. Marriages need that, man.
Yes. Maybe my son, hopefully my son, will take after my wife more than me and the handy this department.
I can see her being the one that says, come here, let me show you something. Like both of y'all come here. Both of y'all come here.
When the toolkit comes
let
out.
Let me show y'all something.
When the toolkit comes out, my son loves to run over there. He takes out the measuring tape and the little screwdrivers. He's
starting already.
He's starting on it. That certainly wasn't me at 3 years old.
See, there
so,
we go.
So Robbie, I heard what you said, and you're absolutely right, brother. I think what insults me the most is that you listed me before Jared. You gave Jared a slight benefit of the doubt on being able to do some of these things, and that was more insulting to me than you just immediately saying that I couldn't do any of them, because you're right, I can't.
Man.
But you know what I'm good at?
Behind Jared?
Yeah.
That's actually, I think, insulting thing I've heard.
Yeah, that is. Really,
yeah.
Yeah.
Ugh. Yeah. That's okay. You but you know
don't
what?
Worry about it.
I'm good.
Your day is going to get better.
I'm good at talking to you for 3 hours a day. So, yesterday.
That's all we need.
Yes, that's right. That's all you need for me. Yesterday, the newest college football playoff rankings were released. The penultimate version. That's something I'm good at. Big words.
Yes, you
the
are.
The penultimate version. The next to last version of the college football playoff rankings came out. The final rankings will be released on Sunday. And the big news of these rankings, Alabama sneaks in at number 11. Miami falls to number 12, which means, barring an upset in the ACC title game between Clemson and SMU, it looks like three-loss Alabama is headed back to the college football playoff.
This is just this is the committee is giving a big middle finger to everybody. They're giving a big middle finger, and they're saying, we don't care what y'all think. We have our own criteria. We may not know what the criteria are, but we got them. And we're just going to sort of rank these teams as we feel we need to. Again, I don't think if you've watched Alabama, and I know they put up the side-by-side records of Miami and Alabama, and Miami's 6-1 versus top 25, and Miami's 4-2, and Alabama's 6-1 in this area, and Miami's 0-1 in this area. I get all of that. But if you've watched both of these teams play, if both of these teams got on the field five times, Miami would win three out of the five times. Alabama is not the Alabama they used to be. And I think the committee, because of the Nick Saban residue, is going to give Alabama the benefit of the time, benefit of the doubt most of the time. You got Nick Saban that's still on television, that's still visible. He doesn't have to be the coach of Alabama. He's still visible in the media. So they're not going to leave Alabama out with three wins. I thought they were, because Alabama, to me, is not one of the top 12 teams in the country. Again, if you've watched them play and you remember what Alabama used to be not too long ago, a year ago, this wasn't even 10 years ago or 5 years ago. This was no more than a year ago. This team this year doesn't resemble anything of last year, and definitely not the years prior to that. They don't play no defense. Their offense is up and down, is erratic. Their quarterback is erratic. This team hasn't been coached well all season. I don't understand. Just because they're in the SEC, if this was an ACC team or a Big 12 team, they would not sniff the top 12 at all. But because they're an SEC team, and most importantly, they are Alabama, which was formerly coached by Nick Saban, who's the greatest college coach and maybe just the greatest football coach ever, they're still going to get the benefit of the doubt, which is completely wrong.
So what doesn't help Miami in all of this?
After starting
9-0, they've lost two of their past three games. They lost to Georgia Tech, mm-hmm. and they lost to Syracuse. Now, I believe those two losses were a combined like 9 or 10 points.
Alabama lost to Oklahoma by more than 20 points.
That is true. But Ward Manuel, who I believe is the front man for the College Football Playoff Selection Committee, explained his reasoning for having Alabama over Miami yesterday on ESPN with Reese Davis. This was Ward Manuel last night.
Joining us now is the chair of the College Football Playoff Selection Committee, Ward Manuel. So, Ward, let's start with the last team in the cluster of SEC teams in Miami. What gave Alabama the edge over the rest of that group?
Well, Reese, it's good to be with you again. What it came down to is, as we evaluated both teams and looked at how they rank. Obviously, we think highly of both teams. One's at 11, one's at 12. But what it really came down to is Alabama is 3-1 against current top 25 teams, and Miami is 0-1. Alabama is 6-1 against teams above 500, and Miami's 4-2. Both have had some losses that weren't what they wanted out of those games. But in the last three games, Miami has lost twice. And so for us, in evaluating their body of work, we felt that Alabama got the edge over Miami.
So that was Ward Manuel explaining the College Football Playoff Selection Committee's rationale for having Alabama over Miami.
How about the eye test? How about the eye test?
I hear that. I thought Alabama losing the way they did to Oklahoma was disqualifying, in my opinion, but apparently not.
I guess not. I am a huge Alabama fan. The only reason I'm a huge Alabama fan is because Nick Saban coached me 2 years at Michigan State my last 2 years. So there's history, there's a relationship there. So when he went to Alabama, I just became an Alabama fan because I like Nick Saban as a person, as a coach. Nick Saban's gone. You don't still have to pander to Nick Saban because essentially that's what they're doing. They're pandering to this residue or this aura of Nick Saban, and I get it. It's hard to get around. I understand it. But you can't tell me by what – if you've watched both of these teams, and I understand Miami has two losses to Georgia Tech and Syracuse. Syracuse and Georgia Tech are good teams. They're good teams. And they lost to both of them combined by less than 7 points or less than 10 points. Alabama goes and get mollywopped by a bad Oklahoma team by over 20 points. And then they lose earlier in the season. They lost to Texas. And who else did they lose to?
Alabama? Yeah. Lost to Vanderbilt.
Vanderbilt, yes. Vanderbilt's a good team. But you lost to Vanderbilt as well. When you are a 20-something point.
The number one team in the country.
Yeah, you're the number one team in the country. And you're over a 20-point favorite. And you end up losing to Vanderbilt. I don't know how they look at both of these teams. And I understand they break it down based upon, you know, they throw the numbers at you. So when you throw the numbers at someone, sometimes it's like, okay, because you don't have like maybe 10 criterias or maybe 6 criterias and two of them is like, or two or three of them is like, okay, you can give us the numbers based on that. And I can kind of see what you're saying, 4-2, 0-1, 6-1, you know, I can see in regards to top 25 opponents that y'all face. But if you've watched both of these teams, like seriously watch both of these teams, Alabama is not the Alabama they used to. They're not even close to it.
So one thing that's working against Miami is that the Hurricanes did not face any teams that were ranked in the particular week that they played. So Miami's schedule is softer than Alabama's schedule. But where I am on this is we talked about bid stealing yesterday. Mm-hmm. If you are anti-Alabama, turn in your crimson red for a little orange and root hard for Clemson over the weekend. Because if Clemson beats SMU, I think SMU still gets in.
And Alabama.
And Alabama would be out.
But then I would still leave Miami out, right?
Yes. I think Miami's probably. Like, I don't know what more can change. Like, we didn't play it in the clip that David just played. But Reese Davis did mention to Ward Manuel, you know, the next version of these rankings, the final version of these rankings come out on Sunday. We have only so many games. Miami's not playing again. Mm-hmm. Alabama's not playing again. How much can change?
So, because right now, Arizona State is in, right? Yeah, they're the 12th team, so they're in. So what if Arizona State loses, Clemson wins? Does that then elevate Miami?
That's a good question.
Because then you got to take out Iowa State, who's has
well, you,
two
yeah,
losses.
You have, yeah, I mean, the Big 12, or yeah, that'd be the Big 12. Arizona State, they're in the Big 12.
Yeah, Big 12.
So the Big 12 is going to get their team in, whether it be Arizona State or, you know, whoever,
Iowa State. I believe they're playing.
Yeah.
In
so
the
they'll
Big 12
get those.
Title game.
They'll get those teams in. I'm trying to. Is there even a pathway for Miami to get in?
I don't think so.
Because even if Arizona State loses, then Iowa State goes, you know, and then it just pushes Arizona State out.
So
Iowa State takes their place.
I think the winner of the Big 12 is the only Big 12.
Yeah, that's the only Big 12. Yeah. So it wouldn't affect the brackets either way.
No. Yeah. So I mean, I think Miami might be done. Like I think it comes down to who wins the ACC. If SMU wins the ACC, as they've been projected to do, they get that spot. Clemson's out. Alabama's in. I think if Clemson wins, I think SMU also gets in. And then Alabama is out.
So what if Penn State gets blown out? What if Penn State loses by more than 14 points, which I think they will end up losing by more than 14 points? What if Penn State loses by more than – how far do they drop out? Because right now they're sitting at 5. Do they drop out with two bad losses?
So Miami,
well,
I believe,
not two bad losses, but one was by 1 point. I get it.
How many
Ohio
spots
State.
Did Miami drop this week? 5, 6 by losing?
They dropped. Yeah, it might have been 5. And then Ohio State dropped what? 5.
This is where I think, and we'll definitely get more into this with Jonathan Hutton and Mitch Light, because they are all up on this too. Mm-hmm. This is where I feel like it is right now. It all comes down to the ACC title game.
Mm-hmm.
If SMU wins, as most people expect them to do, if SMU wins, then I think what we see right now is basically what we're going to get. I think Alabama will be in, SMU will be in, Clemson will be out. I think Clemson, it's a win and you're in situation. If Clemson wins, SMU steals Alabama's bid. That's what I think happens.
This is what I think happens.
All right.
Clemson wins, SMU's out, Bama stays in. I'm telling you.
All right, say that again.
I think if SMU loses to Clemson,
uh-huh,
I think SMU's out.
Wow, okay.
I think they're going to drop SMU that far. And Alabama's going to end up getting in regardless. They want Alabama. It seems like they want Alabama in the playoffs.
They're looking for a reason. They're
looking for a reason to keep Alabama in there. And if SMU doesn't win, I fear, well, SMU fans, you should fear you may drop out of this.
That makes that ACC title game all the more interesting. I'm pulling for Clemson because I want to see
the
what
chaos.
Happens. I will, yes, indeed, the chaos. I want to see what happens. I mean,
maximum chaos.
Maybe it's as simple, like maybe I'm oversimplifying it, mm-hmm, but I think it's as simple at this point that where the teams are really where they're going to be. If you're not playing this weekend, mm-hmm, there's not much room for them to move. It wouldn't make a whole lot of sense to move any of the teams this week that aren't playing this weekend. So I think it comes down to the ACC title game. If Clemson wins, SMU gets the at-large bid that would have gone to Alabama, and Alabama's out.
Hmm. Well, I mean, in theory, you believe that will happen, and that would probably be the right thing to happen. But we also saw last year Florida State not make it because of – they only had one loss, but they didn't make it because their quarterback got hurt. We also see – this year, where teams have dropped considerably out of it after a loss and other teams have been elevated, even though their records are not as good as the team that dropped out of the college football playoff rankings. So we've seen enough to know that just because Clemson may win doesn't mean that SMU stays in the college football playoffs.
So Miami dropped further in the rankings, losing on the road to a solid Syracuse team.
Yes.
They dropped farther than Ohio State did for losing at home to a worse team record-wise in Michigan and only scoring 10 points in doing so. Miami scored, what, 35, 38 yeah. points?
That's why I said when you look at things like this and you pay attention to what the committee has been doing, you can't rule out. You can't just say, well, if Clemson wins, SMU's in, they push Alabama out. No. The committee has shown you that that's not the case. Alabama theoretically could still be in it if Clemson wins, and they will justify it.
Let's see what happens this weekend. The final version of the college football playoff rankings will be released on Sunday. I'm sure everybody will handle it very well. 615-737-1025. Coming up next, Predators television analyst Chris Mason will join us. Also, Willie Dunick will join the program. Coming up next, this week's Nashville's Best Deal is from Tito's Mexican Restaurant. Known for its vibrant flavors and festive atmosphere, it brings the heart of Mexico to Middle Tennessee. Enjoy mouthwatering tacos, sizzling fajitas, and delicious enchiladas, all served with a side of authentic Mexican flair. Get half off a $25 gift card now while supplies last at thegamenashville.com/deals. D-Mace, Fingan, and Donick, 102.5, 106.3, The Game. Let me remind all of our listeners that tomorrow it's your chance to participate in Preds Pick to Click if you correctly guess a Preds player that scores a goal in the Preds game tomorrow night, I should say. You win a pair of tickets to an upcoming Preds home game. Participate with Robbie and Rex Road tomorrow morning at 8:45. Willie Donick, Derek Mason, Adam Fingan here with you, joined on our phone line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, by Predators television analyst Chris Mason, live from Toronto, as well as Willie, where the Predators will play the Maple Leafs this evening. Chris, we've seen the Predators lose three consecutive games in overtime, all by a 3-2 score. They've lost six consecutive overtime games. dating back to late October. When you've watched the Predators in overtime over these past six overtime periods and they come up short in all six, I have my theories as to why they haven't been able to win those games. What is your take on that?
Well, my take is, if you look at the games, they've had chances to win. I think aside from the Philadelphia game where they took the penalty in overtime, they're not capitalizing on their opportunities. And on the flip side of that, the other teams are. And to me, that's, you know, your top players are obviously going to be the ones that are going to be out there at that time. And they have to make plays. They have to finish those games off. You know, we were talking to Bruno this morning about that. And he said, you know, last season, we were the ones finishing games off. We'd get a chance and it would go back and forth and we would be the ones that would make the play. And this year they're not. And, you know, I think their games coming around, the overall game is a lot better in terms of the team play. But to me, the biggest issue is a lot of missed opportunities, a lot of missed shots, a lot of good chances that they're either not connecting on or not able to, you know, turn offense, you know, to score goals. And that's no different in overtime. They had chances right before. I think Spurgeon was the one who scored right before that. Phil had a great opportunity on the side of the net. He missed the net. Minnesota comes back and ends the game. So I just think it's much of the same. And that's why, you know, they're kind of stuck on the two goals a game. And it's unfortunate because you're getting a lot of good performances. Roman Josi's playing an elite level right now. He's, you know, putting up a ton of points single-handedly trying to, you know, keep these guys in it. Saros is playing extremely well right now, but when you look at the top part of the lineup, you know, they're not getting the production that you need to win hockey games.
The Predators made a goaltending swap over the weekend. Out goes Scott Wedgewood. In comes Justus Annunen. I know that UC Saros is projected to start tonight's game against the Maple Leafs, so I would anticipate that Annunen will make his Predators debut tomorrow in Montreal as our resident goaltender. Would you give us a scouting report on Annunen and what you like about his game?
Sure. Well, first of all, his name is pronounced Annunen.
Okay. Well, Nick Kieser? Because Nick Kieser, I said Annunen, and he said Annunen.
It's Annunen, but some say Annunen. So you have you've got options. Okay.
I am putting the blame solely on Nick Kieser. So Kieser, if you're listening, thanks for making me look like an idiot. Please continue, Chris.
Anyway, we had fun with that name today. But no, honestly, I think he's I really like him. I think that's a great trade for the Predators. You get a young big Finn. He moves really well. He's very technical and very quick and athletic for his size. You know, you got a 24-year-old and you get a 6th-round draft pick on top of that. I think it's going to be a nice project for Ben Vanderklok to get his hands on and really work with him. I saw him at the morning skate. You know, they were doing video before practice, going over some clips and, you know, trying to get his methods and you know, his way of thinking the game. And then they, you know, they were doing some work on the ice as well. So he's a big guy, and you know, I expect him to probably play tomorrow. We asked Bruno, how are you going to disperse the goaltender? He said, well, Juice is playing both games because they're both Juice. So Juice is always in the net. So he didn't really give us much, but I expect to see, on and in tomorrow. So it'll be a good chance, but he takes up a lot of net. He's a big kid and he moves well. So looking forward to watching him play.
We're talking with Chris Mason, one half of the Nashville Predators television team. Now, C-Maze, what is it that needs to happen? Because Barry was on with Jerry yesterday. It was a great interview. People should go back and listen to that interview on our podcast, 102.5 Podcast, The Game. But Barry brought up the Christmas, by Christmas. You know, if things doesn't change, then obviously he's going to be thinking about the next move for this team in regards to that. But what has to change realistically for those moves to not happen? And realistically, is it there for them to take? Because not only are you 7-8 points back, but in order to get yourself even, you have to look for other teams to go on sort of a skid as you're picking up points and wins.
Yeah, well, you're right. There's some teams that you figure there'd be a natural correction, that some teams have overachieved and like the Predators have underachieved, but you're going to have to go on a pretty good run, a 22-7 or something like that to get back in it. But to your initial point of what has to happen, to me, it's the guys that are paid to score goals need to score goals. That's the biggest mystery this season for me is the lack of offense. And, at certain points, it was the lack of even generating chances. And I believe now they're kind of coming around and they're putting in some good performances. And I would say the last, few games, even though they've lost in overtime, it looks a lot better. They're getting ozone time. They're getting the shot. They're getting chances. They're just not connecting. They're missing a lot of shots. And to me, that's when you have a team or a group of players that is low on confidence and is second guessing themselves and kind of there's some doubt in your game. That tends to what happened is you miss shots. You hesitate for a second. You think the pass is there. You miss the pass. And what could have been a really good scoring chance, you're in a good scoring area. You try to pass it off. I'm seeing a lot of that lately. And it's the top guys. It's the top line. It's the second line. You've got Zach LaRue's come in and really stabilized. I think that fourth line, they're doing well. He's getting chances. I think Fedor Svechkov, he gets better every game. There's something to his game for sure. And it's good to have, those kind of guys contributing. But if you don't have your top guys scoring consistently, you won't win hockey games. And we've seen that.
Talking to Chris Mason as we get ready for the Predators and the Maple Leafs tonight. And Mace, just a quick thought on Toronto. It's interesting. We were talking to Andrew Burnett this morning. The headliners, Austin Matthews, after all of the summer of Mitch Marner, and do they still want him? What are they going to do with him? Mitch Marner's leading their team in points. Their superstars are having good years. But I thought what was interesting about their season, as we looked at them, they went through a stretch without Austin Matthews for a number of games, and they did fine. They are playing a lot better defensively than people realize.
Yeah, it feels like, I think with the coaching change and bringing in, Berube and everything, I think he's the right personality for this team. And you see those guys, they're one of the best defensive teams in the league. They're getting incredible goaltending. Wall and Stolarz are, arguably, we're watching the all the media last night at the restaurant, and they're having the debate, do the Leafs have the best tandem in the league? Statistically, they're right up there with anybody. They've got stable goaltending. They're defending well. They're a really tough team to generate on. So, and then, as you mentioned, then they got the four-headed monster up top, and all those guys are producing. So it's going to be a really tough challenge. I mean, it doesn't get any easier for the Preds. We're talking about the Preds issues, but they're running into some juggernauts right now and some teams that are playing very well. So they're going to have their hands full with, shutting down those top guys, but also getting inside and trying to get some quality chances against the Leafs.
Yeah, they're playing their fourth team in the top eight in their last six games. And that really makes it hurt that they were not able to win the game against the Flyers. And I thought, against Tampa Bay, where they lost Kucherov in the middle of the game, and he did come back, but that was a missed opportunity too. But they play juggernauts, teams right at the very top of the standings, especially defensively. This is not exactly an easy game to break out of a slump. But, Mace, let's ask another thing, too. I do think Svechkov is playing well, but the guy that has got to play a little bit better for them to connect, as you say, I would love to see Tommy Novak have a breakout here. It's easy to focus on Stamkos and Marchessault, but guys like Novak and Evangelista, who grew up very close to Toronto, they need those guys who played so well last year to start looking like the players they were last year.
Yeah, that's a good point. I feel Evangelista's game is starting to kind of round out. He's making, he made that nice pass to Svechkov for his goal, and I think he's starting to get a little more involved, a little more comfortable. But yeah, you're right. I think Tommy Novak, going into the season, and I've said this before on your show, is that he has to be the guy. He has the skill set to be able to complement shooters like Marchessault and Stamkos. He has the ability to hold on to pucks, to make plays. He's a really heads-up type of player when he's playing well. But he just really hasn't, to this point, taken advantage of that opportunity. And, they tried to start with that, and then that's when we saw the carousel of, guys that Bruno was trying at center or wing, move Cole Smith up there for, you know, a game. They were trying everything and eventually put Novak back. And it looks like they're going to have to stick with that and just grind it out. And it's you need to get him. We've seen long stretches of when Tommy Novak, and that's why he signed that big contract, because he was putting up top end numbers. He was putting up high end numbers, almost point a game type of production. And we just haven't seen that consistently. And I think that line has really struggled and been, you know, kind of a weak point for the team this year. They just haven't been able to get anything consistent 5-on-5 out of the second line. And he's got to be the guy.
Mace, before we let you go, I think it'd be fun for our listeners to hear just what kind of hoopla you get anytime you play in Toronto. And of course, the Predators are in the West, so they don't come through here very often. There's always this enormous group of people that follow the Leafs, but also, to their credit, they're interested in the stories for the other team, right? They are really curious about the Predators. We saw Elliot earlier today, and he says hello to you guys, Adam and Derek. And so, for example, too, the Four Nation face-off, they're going to announce the rosters later today. So that's a big story. It's just when you walk in there, you're just feeling hockey from the time that you hit the outskirts of the building.
Oh, everywhere you go. It's on every TV. Everybody's talking about, you mentioned the interest and the excitement to have the final roster spots announced for the Four Nations Cup. And I did a show this morning, and they know everything that's going on with our team and, you know, potential things. Like they listen to your guys' show too. And some of the stuff they've heard, some of the stuff that Trotz has said on the radio there. And, it's everywhere. I mean, Max is, we all left, we all walked back, and Max is geeking out right there with all the media scrums and everything. He's going to be, he's got Toronto and Montreal, but it really is a hockey mecca. It's everything is hockey here, everywhere you go. So it's always fun. I love coming back. I don't know if I'd want to play or work in the city with the way that they're obsessed with the Leafs and hockey, but it is definitely fun to come. And as a player too, it's fun to come and play in these environments just because it kind of brings you back. You know, Stamkos is from here. He got a chance to go back to his parents' house last night, but it's hockey everywhere, and it's fun to be around.
Chris Mason, Predators television analyst, joining us on DVD as he does every Wednesday. Chris, always a pleasure to speak to you. Enjoy the game tonight.
Awesome. Thank you, guys. Have a great day.
You as well. Chris Mason, of course, with Willie Donick tonight when the Predators take on the Toronto Maple Leafs. Puck drop at 6:30, pregame at 5:30 right here on 102.5, 106.3 The Game. Coming up next, Barry Trotz did his weekly interview with Jared Stillman yesterday. Always a must listen. There was one thing that he did say that we'd like to get into, and we'll do that next. Willie Donick, Derek Mason, Adam Vingan, 102.5, 106.3 The Game.
Well, I think when I hired him, I said, you know, I don't know how it's going to go. I said, I don't know if it's going to be a retool, rebuild. It's going to be a re-something. But I do know this. I want to play faster. I want to play a little different style that allows guys like Roman Josi not to get hit as much. For the most part, he's done that. Now, our team probably hasn't met expectations, and I said it's going to take a while. We added two legacy players. It's quite difficult for them to sort of integrate, if you will. And they, you know, they're going to be part of the solution. And then, you know, obviously we're not going to change the plan. We're going to try to stay with adding young players when we can, like we did with Shveshkov, LaRue. You know, we got guys like Schaefer that will be coming. I just didn't anticipate using them this soon, but if we spiral down a little bit, but at the same time, it is what it is. We've got to get going. We've got to collect some points, and we've got to go see if we can get back in the race here. So, I think we've got till Christmas to find out if we're fully can get ourselves back within punching distance. If not, then you're probably going to see more and more of the young guys in.
That was Barry Trotz yesterday with Jared Stillman during their weekly chat. Willie Donick, Derek Mason, Adam Vingan here with you, continuing the conversation about the Predators. So that last line from Barry Trotz is what I think stuck out to a lot of people. They will see where this team is at Christmas, and if things aren't going right by then still, they'll integrate more younger players into the lineup and start that quote-unquote rebuild plan that Barry Trotz referenced a few weeks ago with Jared. So just very quick math here. The Predators have 10 games until Christmas, half and half on the half and half home and road, so 5 at home, 5 on the road. 6 of their 10 game of these next 10 games are against teams in playoff position, and 4 of the 10 games are against teams currently in the top 10 of the NHL, including tonight against the Toronto Maple Leafs. So, Willie, you were not with us yesterday. We didn't hear from you yesterday. I know you were a busy man. Part of me thought you were very mad at me. And I'll give you a chance to respond to what I said yesterday at some point during the program. Don't you worry. I will give you an opportunity to respond. But what did you think about Barry Trotz there mentioning Christmas as sort of the point of – I'm not going to say the point of no return, because by that point they've only played 30 – they've played 35 games. But him mentioning by Christmas, if things don't go a certain way, it might be time to put even more younger players in the lineup.
Yeah, I think Christmas is always a checkpoint every year to see where you are. And then you get to the break, which will be the Four Nations this year and not an All-Star game. There's basically a two-week break in there. Where do you sit at that point?
And that's in February, by the way, for people who don't know. The rosters
yeah,
for this tournament
February.
The rosters for this tournament are going to be announced later today, mm-hmm. but the tournament itself takes place basically through the middle of February. So there will be no NHL games for about 2 weeks in February.
Right. And then after that, I think we've seen a lot of teams move in different directions after they break for a couple weeks. That's always an odd time of the year in a season like this. And then, of course, there's the assessment you got to make. Are you a buyer or a seller at the trade deadline? Then it's a sprint to the finish line. So there's still a lot of stages left in the season. But as we've talked about a lot, look, the numbers are where they are. I do think they are inching forward in a lot of areas. They are playing, for example, their record in the last 11 games is 3-3-5. And so, on one hand, you've got points in 8 of 11 games. If you could just play better in the overtime and cash in on many opportunities that they've had, the record would look a lot better. And that doesn't sound great, but or during that stretch, they're getting solid goaltending, if not spectacular. They're playing better defensively. They're transitioning through the neutral zone way better than they were out of the gate. And they have plenty of offensive zone possession time. They just cannot make plays when it's time to make plays. And they're ending up with 2 goals. They have scored 2 or less in 16 games this year out of, what do they play, 25?
16 of 25.
16 of 25. They do not have a win in any of those 16.
0-10-6.
Now, that tells you a lot. I mean, some years you get a 1-0 shutout win, or you get a 2-1 win, or, you know, 6 of those are losses in overtime where the third goal by the other team is scored in the overtime. So you sit there and say, you held them to 2 goals in 60 minutes. You got to win those games. So to not have a win in any of the 16, that is troubling to say the least. So you just mentioned who they play during this stretch. This is not exactly the easiest time to bust out and eat up inferior teams between now and Christmas. So if you're sitting here and you're asking me, are they going to have it all solved by Christmas? I don't think that's the case, but I think it's much more about how do you look? Are you starting to come together? Are you starting to see signs of life from guys like Novak, guys like Evangelista, guys who last year were different players that aren't really getting it done this year? So it's not just the new guys, you know, getting acclimated anymore. I think that should be out the window. But it's a combination of how is everybody playing as a group.
Quickly, Willie, you mentioned in the conversation with Chris, and you know, I've covered many games in Toronto. As you said, it's the center of the hockey universe. There are a lot of reporters around the team, a lot of around the Maple Leafs and in the city, of course, a lot of analysts around the team. I'm curious what the vibe was like today once the Predators dressing room opened up, once the assembled reporters could talk to Andrew Brunette, you know, what the storylines were, what kind of questions were being asked.
Well, we kind of hustled back to get on on the show today, so we weren't there. The Predators were still skating when we left, and so I haven't seen if anything interesting has come out of the media availability, which is always big. It's different in Toronto than virtually anywhere else that you go. So I'll have to take a look and see. You guys might see anything on social media for that. I mean, the Leafs, we know what the Leafs are. They're among the top teams in the league, and the question for them has never been the regular season. It's always about the postseason. So it's interesting how their season has gone. So I don't really have anything from this morning, but I think the Predators are going to put out basically the same lineup tonight and hope for better things. I thought they played a really good game in Minnesota. They need a couple of breaks. They need a couple of posts to go in. They need a bounce off of somebody to get that extra goal and get some confidence going. Because I do think the foundation of their game is in a much better place than it was a month and a half ago.
615-737-1025. We will pick up the Predators conversation in a little bit. But coming up next, Jonathan Hutton from Hot Mic with Hutton and Withrow will join us. We'll talk the college football playoff. We'll talk the Titans and more coming up next. But before we do, tune into 93.3 FM Totally Hits Nashville tonight for MTSU men's basketball. The Blue Raiders take on Rhodes at the Murphy Center. Tip-off is at 4 with the pregame beginning at 3:30. Coverage is also available on the Totally Hits Nashville app and at totallyhitsnashville.com.